If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. A lot of people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. You can listen outside the car. Right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for free. Just go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. You can listen on your phone, at home, and online. That's SiriusXM.com/busted. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required. This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, the innovator of violence, the landlord of the House of Hardcore, Tommy Dreamer, and I talk all about heels. That's right, the greatest heels in the history of pro wrestling. I give my top five, Tommy Dreamer gives his top five, and also we get the top heels from our listeners, the Busted Open Nation. Also, we have two of the top heels of all time joining the podcast today, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, and the Prince of Darkness himself, Kevin Sullivan. All that right now on the Busted Open Podcast. We had Ted DiBiase on the line, you know, now this day and age of using Zoom. Ted DiBiase was there. And then, Tommy, you opened your big mouth and you said, don't embarrass. And I said, well, yeah, I do what I do. I'm LaGreca. And then he hung up. He's gone now.
Absolutely. Yeah, he realized he has a price and he's not going to sell out to you.
But we are going to have a giveaway for the Busted Open Nation. This is extremely exciting. We're going to have a chance for a Nation member to win four tickets to a virtual fan experience with the Million Dollar Man. So we're going to get the Million Dollar Man up, and he is going to give us all the details. And then we're going to have the Nation give us a call and have a chance to win and hang out with the Million Dollar Man on Zoom.
Let's go back to the Nation. Why not?
All right. I told you. Didn't I say we're going to take phone calls? And there Absolutely. We go. Let's get back to the very busy phones. Let's go out to Al in Ontario. Al, what do you got, my friend?
Hello.
Hey, Al. How are you?
Not bad, buddy. How you doing?
Good, brother. What do you got? Give us some of your greatest heels of all time.
I've only got one, and he's the greatest heel of all time, was the Royal Exalted Sheik. Sabu's uncle. All you got to do is go out and find the VHS or beta tape called I Like to Hurt People. He was the greatest United States champion of all time. He sold out Cobo Hall more than anybody in Detroit, and he's never remembered anymore.
Al, I have the VHS tape of I Want to Hurt People. I love that movie. He is amazing. And you're right. I mean, Tommy is representing the Sheik today because he's got a Detroit Lions hat on. So he's representing the Sheik in the great state of Michigan. Al, I can't argue with the greatest heel of all time being the original Sheik.
He was the best. If you watch that movie now, even at 60 years old, poop touches cloth. He still scares the hell out of me.
Al, awesome call.
There's something called the internet. You can go on something called YouTube and you could still see some of the Sheik's matches. Maybe you were at ringside, and thank you for the call.
Yeah, thanks for the phone call, Al.
Have a great day, hey.
You got it, man. Al, when this show is over, is going to throw his Betamax tape into his Betamax machine and he is going to watch Hurt People. I think that's amazing. Good call by Al.
The last time I saw a beta machine was at Paul Heyman's house, where he had not one but two beta machines and all these old school MSG shows. And I was like, you have a beta machine? Back in the day, those were expensive as can be. And the fact that he still had, I was like, oh man, you should convert them one day. Wonder if he still has them. But yeah, I love the fact that the caller said a beta machine. That is old as old school. Gabby doesn't even know what the hell we're talking about.
No.
Like, what's an alpha and a beta machine? So, yeah.
Ted and Gary, and I got to give a shout out to our engineers today, Ted and Gary. They've added another phone line. So now we have 38 phone lines available for phone calls. Now they made the extra effort to get us an extra phone line. So now instead of 37, which I can't believe Gabby and Guns were able to get that done, we now have 38 phone lines available for the Busted Open Nation. And I'm telling you right now, Tommy, each and every line is lit to talk about the greatest heels of all time. Let's go out to another Jay in St. Louis. What's going on, Jay?
Hey guys, happy heel day to you
guys. That's right, hashtag heel day, Jay.
Absolutely. So my list, I started watching regularly right after the Ruthless Aggression era started. So all of my heels are going to be from that era and to today. Number five is going to be Vicky Guerrero, because when she said excuse me, the booze came out, you know. And number four is Eric Bischoff. I hated him as general manager of Raw, and I popped like crazy when he was fired. He did a great job as heel. Number three is going to be Edge. He was a great heel during the Ruthless Aggression era. Number two, Randy Orton. Ooh. And number one, the first person I truly hated in wrestling, Triple H.
All right. I mean, all from that era. Jay, really good list. And Jay, a younger fan, grew up during the Ruthless Aggression era, and that's where his list is based on. But Tommy, I don't care what era you watch professional wrestling, I think, to me, again, I have my laminated top five list, and this man is on it. The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, now joins us here on Busted Open. Mr. DiBiase, how are you today?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're great, and it's an honor to have you on. And I mean, honestly, like, when you hear that you were the most hated man in pro wrestling, I mean, how does that make you feel? Because you're a good man. You really are. But when it came to seeing you on TV and in the ring, you were not. I think we lost. I think he got offended by what I said, Tommy.
Stupid Zoom meetings.
I don't have sign of gassy, but oh gosh, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. We have you. We're there. Okay. We got you, Mr. DiBiase.
All right. Well, I mean, I love to hear that because that meant I did my job well. Fans tell me all the time, they go, gosh, you know, I don't be offended, Mr. DiBiase, but I hated your guts. Thank you very much. That means I did my job very well.
That's awesome.
First time you turned heel, was it in Mid-South?
Yes, I turned heel on the Junkyard Dog. The angle was they did a deal where I was going to, we were going to have a match to determine who was going to get the shot at the North American title. And so it came down to me at JYD. And of course, we cut the babyface promos, both of us. You know, we're good friends, but business is business. Let the best man win. And then we have the match, and the deal goes where I started. I used to do, as a babyface, I would do a spinning toe hold, a funk move, into a figure four, a leg lock. So I do the spinning toe hold move, and JYD kicks me off. I take the bump over the top rope to the floor. He stops the referee's count, gets out on the floor, helps me up, rolls me back into the ring, and I roll to the middle of the ring, go in the tights, load the glove, and when he goes to pick me up, I give him one uppercut. He dropped like a brick, and I mean, the people just went crazy. Watts, I'll tell you what, Bill Watts, in my estimation, was one of the greatest minds this business ever had. And I give him a lot of credit as to my education to the psychology of pro wrestling.
Wow. And, you know, you mentioned the Junkyard Dog, one of the biggest baby faces of all time, one of the most loved wrestlers of all time. Did you have any near calls, especially in Mid-South, especially in that era when it came to the fans and the hatred that the fans had for you?
Yeah, occasionally. I'll tell you, the funny story is that as soon as I turned heel, Grizzly Smith, who's basically, that's Jake Roberts' dad, And he was kind of like the agent who showed up at all of the shows to let everybody know what they were going to do that night, you know, and what have you. And so I told Grizzly, I said, look, I said, first time I wrestled JYD in New Orleans, I said, I am not driving my car. And he said, why? I said, you know why? I said, because when I come out, it'll be on blocks. I mean, the fans back then, they took the wrestling real serious, and especially in New Orleans. And so he said, okay, well then ride with me. So I rode down there with him, and he's neutral, right? And so, you know, we have the match, and I told Dog, I said, look, I said, you can't just roll out there like you normally do. I said, all these people think that you've just been screwed by your best friend. So you hit the, you know, you hit the door on dead run, and then when you slide in, I'll slide out and run around the ring, and I'll roll back in, you roll back in, you know, I'll stop you and shoot you in for a clothesline, duck a clothesline, come off and hit me with whatever you want to, and just keep coming until I say quit. And then we got him up as high as we could, and he's getting ready to thump me, and I look with the glove again and knock him out. So we'll see you again next week. So I get back in the dressing room, and I'm showered and everything, and Grizz comes walking in, and he just puts both his hands on his hips, and he's just looking at me, shaking his head. I said, what's wrong? And I said, is there something wrong with the match? He said, no. He said, the match was great. I said, so what's wrong? He said, they slit my tires. All four of them. So he says, we're going to be here a while. See, I told him, I said, see, I told you. I said, they slit your tires. I said, I wouldn't have had a car.
That's amazing, Tommy. Isn't that great to hear stories like that?
Yeah, man, that's old school. I mean, you haven't. It's a lost art being a heel. Plus, with all the times that we have, I mean, I've been a part of some real heel heated moments. But that generation was like Teddy said, it was his job to control the environment for people to hate him, and he, you know, and you also, Ted, you talk about, you know, you have Bill Watts, but your mentor. Terry Funk was probably one of the greatest heels of all time and just did things. I would always remember that unpredictable factor when you would see a Terry Funk match where he'd go like he was getting into the ring and then he'd turn and like snap like at a fan, and you would see everyone draw back because you didn't know who he was going to hit or swing his chaps at. And it was just like those little things where when, you know, a wrestler reacts and the fan jumps back, like that's psychology 101 in the sense of you don't know what this guy's going to do because he's crazy and he's a badass.
Right. And you're right. And I didn't wait till I got in the ring to start healing. As soon as I left the dressing room door, as I walked to the ring, I would stop occasionally and I would just look at people, you know, I'd look at them like they're dung. Right. You know, and of course people can read body language like that, you know, and some, you know, they I remember in this, you'll love this story. There was this one little old lady who was always at ringside in Jackson, Mississippi. She would just stand up and give me hell, point her finger at me. And so, and I would just give it right back to her. So I think I was wrestling Jim Duggan, and we did some spot, and I rolled out of the ring and I backed up to the guardrail, the barricade. And all of a sudden I feel this searing pain in my right I spin around and hit somebody, lady, and she had hit me in the butt with a hat pin about 2 inches long. I mean, I went from mad to almost busting out laughing, but I had that one coming because I had to get the hell every time I went to the ring. That's fun stuff.
You know, I always talk about on this show, the first wrestler that I really kind of got behind and I felt it helped me fall in love with pro wrestling was Tommy Wildfire Rich. And you had a great feud with Tommy Rich in early 1984 in Georgia Championship Wrestling. And then the whole match with Mr. R that we all thought was Tommy Rich under that mask. And it turned out to be Brad Armstrong. I mean, you know, talk about that feud and what it was like in Georgia at that time.
Well, I mean, that program right there kind of set things that it kind of brought a revitalization to the territory. And actually, I think Buck Grobley was booking at the time. And that angle, I had already done that angle, but I had done that angle in Mid-South, if I'm not mistaken, with Junkyard Dog, where we had the loser leave town match and everybody figures I'm going. And I win the match. And then he showed up the next week under the mask. And of course, everybody knew it was him. And I'm screaming and hollering at that. Everybody knows it's Junkyard Dogs as well. All you got to do is unmask me and prove it, you know? So, similar. So, but I think, you know, I don't think it was Brad Armstrong. I think it was Tommy Rich, because everybody, I mean, the blonde hair's hanging out underneath the mask. Everybody knows it's him. It was the same angle. So we had a blast with that. All you got to do to prove it is unmask me, right?
I mean, I don't know what you're saying, Mr. DiBiase. As far as I know, what I was watching on my TV when you unmasked him, it was Brad Armstrong. That's what I'm going at. That's how I remember it. It was Brad Armstrong, not Tommy Rich.
Well, maybe I forgot.
And then, Ted, you have a different type of character revival when you come to the WWE as Million Dollar Man. And it's off to the races as top heel in the company, top heel heat. And, you know, you were part of probably one of the largest watched wrestling matches at, you know, the Saturday night's main event. Just you being that heel, were there any times in WWE where you were like, this is too much heat, or you feared for your life, or there was about to be a riot?
You know, I don't think I ever had that feeling in WWE. You know, in Mid-South, it was old school. It was, you know, there wasn't as much. There was security, but I mean, even Bill Watts would tell us. He said, "Look, if you're a heel," he says, "you better know this: if you ever get in a fight and you don't win, you're fired." So you had to be able to take care of yourself for sure. But you know, being that, you know, Vince had come out and publicly, you know, told the whole world that wrestling was sports entertainment, you know, and the security was a whole lot better. I don't think that I ever got to a place where I feared like that. Now, there were a couple of times publicly when I being in a club or something where, you know, somebody had a little bit too much to drink would come up, say, "Oh, yeah, you're that guy on television, blah, blah, blah," try to pick a fight with me. And but the one thing I always did when I went, I'd go into restaurants and nightclubs, and I would tell the people at the front door, I go, "Look, I'm just here to have a good time." I said, "I would appreciate it if you keep an eye on me, because every now and then somebody comes up," and those guys really appreciated that. And so I never really ended up having any issues like that. Never.
You know, Ted, something that you're doing on today's show and moving forward here is, I know that you're giving away right here on today's show, which is very rare. I mean, a Million Dollar Man actually giving something away to the Busted Open Nation, but two sets of four tickets to a virtual fan experience with you, the Million Dollar Man. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. So tell our fans about this experience and what we're going to be giving away on today's show.
Well, what I'm doing is this virtual fan experience is, you know, there's three packages. You know, like for $100, you get a 5-minute Zoom call, personal interview with me, where, you know, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. And you get a copy of that call as well as the Zoom call, as well as an item autographed and a social media shout out. That's the $100. Package. And then for $75, it's more of like a panel at a Comic-Con, where there's a lot more people on the call, and people will at random be able to ask me questions, but everybody there is on the same call. And that's I think the $75 package. And then for, you know, and for like, I think it was $35, I can't remember now, I've let my the guy that handles all this stuff for me do all it, but I think for $35, you get a story. One of my stories, you don't know which story you're going to get. One of the stories that I tell you know, plus an autograph and a shout out. And that those are the three packages. And because for timing's sake, you know, we didn't know and how you know, it was, so we're going to do this tomorrow is the first day. And then Saturday will be the second day, this coming Saturday. And then next Tuesday will be the last. We're doing it over a 3-day period. So, you know, we didn't know what kind of volume we'd have. So we wanted to make sure that anybody that did want to do it could join in on it. So that's what we're doing. You know, it's a new thing for me. It's a new world we're living in. So we're going to see how it goes. And I appreciate you guys having me on to tell everybody about it.
No, absolutely. And we're going to give away 2 sets of 4 tickets to this amazing virtual experience with the $1 Million Man, Ted DiBiase. I mean, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Unfortunately, we're going through this pandemic, but you know what? I think this is a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. Take advantage of the times that are going on right now. And to be a part of this experience, especially at this time with a Hall of Famer, with one of, as we've been saying all show long, one of the greatest heels of all time. We're going to give you all the information and all the information on how you can win over the next couple of minutes here on Busted Open. But first, Mr. DiBiase, always a pleasure having you on this show. Thank you so much for the time today.
Hey guys, thank you for having me, and I'll be happy to come again anytime. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Again, Ted DiBiase,
the million. But as I go, remember, always remember, whether it's your birthday, whether it's Father's Day, whether it's Christmas, everybody's got a price. The $1 Million Man.
Talking to the biggest names in pro wrestling.
WWE Hall of Famer Edge.
I had to start with Randy. I knew that coming back, having this cherry of a story dropped in his lap, that Randy would step up. He just needed something to be able to sink his teeth into. But then the next night after the Rumble, when I heard people screaming, I was like, oh my God. This feels like old school NWA Dusty Rhodes. Like, this is what I was hoping for. I was like, man, this is going to be so much fun.
Busted Open, Monday through Saturday, 9 to noon Eastern.
By the way, I totally forgot that 96 Survivor Series. I know I've told you this story and I probably said it on the air. The finish of that Survivor Series where they switched the title, I did the night before with the camera and Brian Lee. And when they aired that the next night, I was livid. I was going crazy. Because I was like, they stole my finish. How did they do it? And this didn't air on television for ECW. And Paul, I went nuts on Paul. And I was like, you're a stooge. You told them all this stuff. And he basically said, he said that he saw Howard Finkel in the audience. And he tried pitting on Howard Finkel. And then I hit up Howard Finkel when years later when we were friends. And I asked him, he's like, Tommy, I did not do that. But Paul tried blaming Howard Finkel for stooging off that finish. And I asked both Sid and Sean about that. And Sid was just like, I don't know, Vince just came in and changed it. It wasn't the original one. And Sean said, Vince just changed it like last minute. And I was just like, that was mine, you sons of bitches.
Bastards. Bastards, I tell
you. So serious. And oh, man, you don't know. You don't know the crazy Tommy Dreamer. By the way, when we had Ted DiBiase,
I don't want to know the crazy Tommy Dreamer, to be honest.
No. It was just like everything was so garnered towards wrestling, and my whole life was just, there was nothing like sidetracked. I mean, it was nuts. It really was. But when we had Ted DiBiase on, I wanted to call Rob Van Dam and wake him up and have like, pretty much Ted DiBiase just wake up Rob Van Dam and then hang up on him just like to prank him, because a young Rob Van Dam was his first foray into professional wrestling when he had to kiss the $1 Million Man's feet on national television.
Nice. Nice. All right. You mentioned the $1 Million Man, Ted DiBiase. This is your time, Tommy. Give us your top five, starting with five, your top five heels of all time.
Well, as I said, Terry Funk is number 6, but you had me to go number 5.
Okay, again, you know, I did say top 5.
Honorable
top 6,
mention, we always have to go that way. This is the hardest thing to do, Dave. You sit there and laminate your list. I and think, then the nation makes me change my mind. Anyway, number 5, the $1 Million Man,
nice.
Ted DiBiase.
We just had on. Number 5, $1 Million Man, Ted DiBiase. Number 4?
number four. I feel he's probably one of the top heels of all time, but due to the fact that he's a pretty darn good babyface, but making a lot of money, making people mad, Triple H.
All right, Triple H. And again, you mentioned your criteria earlier. Your criteria is not only heat, but tickets sold, money. So those are your two for the criteria of your top five heels. So at number five, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. At number four, Triple H. Who do you have at number three?
At number three, though I feel he should be number one, but I couldn't put him at number one just because I felt the other two were so, so strong. But a man that never worked as a babyface. And when I tell you, I don't think in this generation he would even be on social media because he knew it was his job and he hated, he loved to be hated, Ravishing Rick Rude. And I was fortunate enough to spend time with him and he just totally just wanted to do things to have people despise him. Number two will be our next guest because of what he represented. He represented Satan. He was the devil. And there is no top heel in the world than the devil. But this was Kevin Sullivan. And it was so, so real. And it was even realer to me because of what he did to my hero, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. But a top, top heel. And he was one of those people, like, it was always, to me, plotted evil. And even though he didn't have the push he had in WCW with the whole Varsity Club, he still was just this evil person where, you know, at any moment you think he would take out his golden spike and just stab you to death right on television until you came back next week, because it's weird. And my number one heel, and I think this is going to piss you off, Dave, but I just think he has to be, for number one, the money that he became the greatest heel of all time because of something that happened behind the scenes. And I know he really wasn't a wrestler, but there's also times where he's the number one heel in the real world. And not for me, but for the character, Vince McMahon, because without Vince McMahon character, I don't think we would have had the Stone Cold Steve Austin take off the way he did. And Vince McMahon, the character, whenever he came out, he would just resonate pure hatred to the wrestling fans.
No, I can't argue with you
for those wrestling fans. And you got to give, I always give him credit because he wasn't trained to be a professional wrestler and he had some really, really good wrestling matches. He also, you know, he got hurt in wrestling and he also did a lot of things that someone, you know, taking those bumps. I remember when he took the bump off the cage. He's not, you know, he wasn't a trained wrestler to take bumps, but he went out there and did things. And that's why I have respect for him too, because, you know, as we all say, he didn't do anything that he would make his wrestlers do something that he wouldn't do himself. And then he went out there and in his, what, late 50s, early 60s, took amazing ass bumps and bled and got his bell rung and did everything the boys did.
Yeah, I mean, think about that match at WrestleMania 26 with Bret Hart. Wasn't much of a match, but the beating he took from the entire Hart family in Arizona at WrestleMania 26. And I can't fault you. I don't hate the list at all. Amazingly enough, Tommy, usually when we do this list, our lists are very, very similar because in a lot of ways we share the same brain. Only two of your top five heels are on my list, Tommy. So after we have Kevin Sullivan, who's going to be joining us in just about 5 minutes, I'll unveil my top five and a great list from Tommy Dreamer. Let's continue to get lists from the Busted Open Nation. Let's go out to Walter in New York. Walter, what do you got for greatest heels, my friend?
Well, on top of my list, I got Greg Valentine, because of all time I've ever seen him wrestling, I've never seen him get pinned.
And, all right, so Greg Valentine, that's a good one, Walter.
I got Ken Patera, Cowboy Bob Orton, Brock Lesnar, and Dolph Ziggler.
All right, Walter, that's a good list. Dolph Ziggler, interesting one. I didn't expect to hear Dolph Ziggler's name. Brock Lesnar, as we know now, Tommy, is one of the most hated wrestlers for sure. Greg Valentine on his list. Ken Patera, that's an interesting choice too. Pretty good list, Tommy.
I like the list because you can tell he's an old school fan, but he also recognizes new school talent. Cause you know, his first one, I'm going Greg Valentine, say, oh, this is a guy who's watching from the 70s into the, you know, 80s, but man, he was all over there. And listen, Dolph Ziggler has been a guy, you know, to me, he's one of those guys that has been an unappreciated heel. But if you think about whenever they need somebody to go to, they always go to Dolph Ziggler. And when he was getting the push that, you know, he had gotten hurt when he was the champion, but Dolph Ziggler is a great person who you want to take the handcuffs off of him too and let him be a heel. I mean, even his social media, he's heel Ziggler. He loves being the bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, he really does. He embraces it. There's no doubt about it, Tommy.
Yep. You know, and also we'll go back to that Royal Rumble. You know, you watch the first part of it, that the first two entrants, The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, were there any two better heels when they first started? But because they were such good workers and such strong in-ring performers and talents, they could just go from heel to babyface. I mean, you look at the Rockers, they were beloved. And then when Shawn turned heel, it was like, we hated your guts. And then when he turned babyface, it was like, oh my God, you're the best. And that's the beauty of this, because of the emotions that we can control or they could control. I mean, The Undertaker too, he's The Undertaker. Then he goes to the badass and he comes back as Undertaker. I mean, there's a reason these guys are legends in professional wrestling.
This week on World of Basketball, Kelly Olynyk and Kevin Pangos, two former Gonzaga stars, joined the show. And Kevin spoke about the time he dropped 48 points on the Golden State Warriors, Andrew Wiggins.
He gets mad when people say that, because he said he was only guarding me for half the game. So, but yeah, in high school, there was one game we played in a tournament, and it was one of those games that everything was falling. I think I also threw up a lot of shots. the highlights don't show that, but yeah, it was one of those games where things were falling and had 48.
New episodes of World of Basketball are available every Thursday on the SiriusXM app, Pandora, and Apple Podcasts.
And we have had an amazing reaction from the Busted Open Nation, giving us their list of their top five heels of all time. And somebody who was on your list, Tommy, and somebody that is going to be on my list when I unveil it after our next guest, and that is the Prince of Darkness himself, the one and only Kevin Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan, how are you this morning?
Great, Dave. How are you and Tommy doing?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you, my darling?
Sitting in your lair of evil.
Yeah. You know, I love the topic because there's so many different heels, and there were so many great different heels in different eras. You know, and there were a lot of them were very different. A lot of them were similar, but the thing about them, and I don't have to explain it to you two guys. The thing that makes a heel is that people believe. You know, they say, "Yeah, he did, yeah." You know, and I think that's that the great heels, and you've worked with 99% of them, Tommy. You know, that's what and they only get what a baby face gives them too. So, you know, a baby face of your caliber makes it so much easier.
You, well, I mean, worked as a baby face as well. And who would you say are some of the greatest? Because, I mean, you're my number two greatest heel of all time, just because of that fear. And you had that mystique factor of, you know, we didn't know anywhere you're coming. Plus, if they've ever worked with you, you really are a heel. Who was some of the greatest heels you ever worked?
The greatest heel, I think, of all times is the Sheik. I mean, and the reason why I say that, you know, he was kind of the, I don't think there would have been an ECW without Sheik. He was the forerunner of hardcore wrestling. And I got a story about the Sheik that I don't think a lot of people know. Back in the day when wrestling was on the Dumont Network and it was on NBC Nationwide, they had two national television programs coming out of Chicago. And so wrestling was red hot. They were like, and they were twice a week. One of them was Monday and Wednesday. The other one was Tuesday and Thursday, I believe. Well, the Sheik was going to wrestle Luthez. And Luthez, as most people know, was accepted by everybody as the ultimate in legitimacy. And in, on Lou's cards until the few times when they had conventions and had wrestling matches, or I say conventions, when the NWA met, that they would allow Mildred Burke, who was a real shooter, and June Baez wrestle. But other than that, you couldn't have midgets or you couldn't have women on the card with Lou. And Lou hated, he absolutely hated gimmick wrestlers. And somebody, he saw Lou come in the building, he was supposed to wrestle Lou, and Lou made a comment in passing like, you better tighten your boots out. Well, the Sheik went outside and there was a snowstorm in Chicago and he buried himself under the bus in the snow. And the police came out and he stayed under the bus for an hour before they could get him out and the mattresses, you know, disqualified or whatever they wanted to call it. Well, the next week they came back with the match and the, it was a forfeit if he didn't show up. And they turned like 3,000 people away. And Fez loved to work with the Sheik because he said he was so innovative. But I mean, I when I went to wrestling, I've been wrestling amateur for 10 years. I knew it was, you know, you couldn't take a guy and be on by his ear and all that. And the Sheik came out and he wrestled, I believe it was Antonio Pugliese. And I actually felt the building shake. And I thought, wow, this guy is real. And my Sheik would be 1A, 1B, of course, is Terry Funk. I mean, the Funks and the Sheik and Abdullah, you know, they set Japan on fire and put it on fire for years. But, yeah, the Sheik is my number one with Terry and very close to. It wouldn't matter who was one or two, but the Sheik was like my uncle, so I really enjoyed him.
And I had the pleasure of seeing you and Sheik work in the original ECW. And we talk about one of our first early houses of it's like, oh my God, you can't move. It was, you know, you and Taz with Sheik, and it was just off. And even that mystique of him walking into the locker room and there was, you know, all these hardcore, tough ass people, every wrestler there, you know, showing respect to him, but all the young up-and-comers like myself, Sandman, were like so humbled to be in this guy's presence because you knew you were in the presence of greatness. And it was just on the flip side, I then went to his house and hung out with him and Sabu. And I was just like still in awe of this guy. But like for me, and you know, I you know how much I love this business. I didn't want to see him in his gym shorts and a t-shirt, you know, just hanging out. I wanted to just see, I wanted him to like throw a fireball at me at the table.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you a great story. This is when the heyday of the Crockett's, when we had the Great American Bash. We were on tour for 72 nights. And I said to Dusty, I was in the office at the time, I said, Dusty, bring back the Sheik and put you and the Sheik together, because you'd be a baby face for the first time in that building, and put me and Murdoch against you and the Sheik. I said, we'll sell that building out, because just the Sheik alone coming back as a baby face. He said, we're not going to sell it out. I said, I'll tell you what. I bet you $500 we'll sell that building out. He said, okay, you're on. So we had a cage match, and without saying a word, it was the only time this ever happened to me, guys. We had a double switch in the tag match. I ended up being the Sheik's partner, and Murdoch ended up being Dusty's partner, and we did sell out. And it was such an exciting thing for me, because I used to go to Japan, and I would go out with Sabu to kind of protect the Sheik. Not that he needed protecting, but to make sure no crazies came up behind him or anything. So it was very, very enjoyable, my time. And I got to spend a lot of time around the Sheik outside of the business, too, like you did. And like you said, it's a little bit of a disappointment when he is and going, ooh, 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 and playing up in the sky, you know.
So, yeah. Kevin, you know, the business has changed, and I know you still follow up on it. And you look at the business, your job was, and you controlled the environment, but I know at times the environment got too hostile, where you were part of riots and you were part of people wanting to kill you. Where can you tell some of those stories of like riots or fighting, literally fighting for your life to get to the back?
Yeah, I have some funny ones too. The funny one I have is, Chris, you know, people always talk about Dusty not wanting to do jobs. Dusty was a very smart booker. He did jobs when people didn't expect them. I'll give you an example. We did this thing. We booked a Lose or Leave town in a cage in St. Pete. And back in the day, St. Pete was the town, so you built it for a month. So I was on top in Tampa and all the towns around, and it was either with Barry or Blackjack, and I got beat right in the middle of the ring for 2 weeks. So everybody knew I was going, and that's the infamous Jake the Snake Santa Claus coming down when there's all kinds of Santa Claus in the audience, and Jake gave me the atomizer. I stuck it down Dusty's throat, knocked him out, and then hence the appearance of the Midnight Rider. And the good thing about the Midnight Rider was, the Midnight Rider that followed 2 weeks later beat Ric Flair for the world title, but the stipulation was that if he won the belt, he didn't have to tell anybody who he was, but he had to show Bob Geigel who he was. So Dusty wins the belt gets stripped, and who caused the belt to get stripped? But the guy, you know, that beat him to become the Midnight Rider, Dusty, and Tommy Hughes spent a lot of time around Dusty. Dusty didn't just go from A to B. Dusty could run through the alphabet pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
When you look at what you were able to do, and I would say that, Tommy, that 5-year run for Florida and championship wrestling from Florida, like when I think of a heel, I automatically think of you, Mr. Sullivan, because I couldn't imagine anyone ever cheering you, you know, because of what you did to Dusty Rhodes. it's not only hatred, but fear. Like, you know, for me as a young wrestling fan, I feared you. I was afraid of you. You know, the pictures of you in wrestling magazine would bring a chill down my spine. And I'm sure that the reaction in every arena you went into was that same way. I mean, when you look back at that time and that magical period of pro wrestling, could you ever imagine anyone ever getting on their feet and cheering you during that time?
No, but as Tommy will tell you, the reason why every babyface put me over like I was King Kong. I mean, I was 5'8", 250, and Blackjack, and I'm not going down off my feet for Blackjack Mulligan. I'm just a friend of mine. Call me up that he was watching the tape he had gotten to wrestling because of me. And he said, there's no way Andre the Giant was that big. I said, why? He said, well, he's punching you in the head and all you're doing is shaking your head. I said, well, you know, my thing was, these guys, I had Billy Graham, I had one of the greatest baby faces of all time, besides Dusty, was Barry Windham. At Barry's height, you know, he looked like a movie star. When you threw him over the top rope, he very seldom touched. He splattered on the cement floor, and when he's crawling in, I'd make sure that I picked out a good-looking girl, and I'd run down that apron and kick his head off, you know? And you have to have the baby faces, and they were the ones that created the fear, because I always thought of myself as, you know, the alien. Remember the scene there at the dinner table and the guy starts convulsing and the alien pops out and he's about 6 inches tall?
Yeah.
Well, what if they got a fly swatter and swatted the alien and the alien was dead? So at the end of the movie, is the alien really that big, or has he became that big in your mind? And that's what they did for me. I mean, I had Billy Graham, I had a host of others come through to support me. I had Flair as my partner. I had Viper as my partner. I had the crumb to crumb to really help me along. I mean, I'd like to be an egomaniac and say, most of it was mine. Most of it was theirs, struggling to get my ass over.
And, you know, I always talk, you know, me and Raven, what the best part of that feud was, it spawned so many other characters. And a lot of that was borrowed from you, with when you talk about great characters that you surrounded yourself with, and you literally would turn people from good to evil. You know, woman, you had Purple Haze, you had Muckum Singh, Bob Roop, Mayim Singh, that's what he was, right? Luna Vachon,
yeah,
superstar Billy Graham. You had this act of like Mike Davis, you know, who was an enhancement talent. You turned him into, you know, Dusty Rhodes, all the things that you had did. There was no boundary for you, you know, blinding Dusty's sister, or, you know, stabbing Dusty, Blackjack Mulligan, who took it for Dusty. There was no line you wouldn't cross because you knew that was your job, to be the bad guy.
Right. And you know, the thing about that is you got to say to yourself, you have to, I believe, there has to be, if you're into that run, you cannot go more than 8 weeks without doing something horrific. I mean, you can go out and beat people up. But one time I remember this. The Road Warriors were coming in, and business was down. And they came to me and said, you have to draw over $100,000 this week. And we didn't have all the major towns. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we got a big guarantee on the Road Warriors at Ellering, and you have to do it. So Mulligan stepped up and said, I got an idea. We'll get a bottle. You're going to tape the bottle. And it was a LaCroix bottle. And we were doing an angle, and Jack came out, and I took the bottle and broke it, shoved it in Jack's face. Well, you know, maybe it's not the smartest thing in the world today, but he cut himself, and it was bleeding all over the place, and he was out for the week. And when the Road Warriors came in, we did huge business. So we had the baby faces. I don't think I could. I know I couldn't have done it without the baby faces that I had. That's for sure. And at that time, Tommy, you know what it reminded me of? Going into an ECW dressing room. Everybody was a family. Everybody wanted it to work. And that was the good thing back then, was the difference between the first match and last match was not that different. If you made $2,000 a week on top, the guys underneath were making at least $900. So it was like, hey, let's get behind whoever, because they're putting bread on the table. So, yeah, it reminded me of ECW.
Dave, let me tell you a quick story. Kevin will remember it when I start telling him. We're working in the Bahamas, and we talk about, I don't know Kevin that much, but I'm starting to form a friendship with him. And we're working for a company, ICW, with the Sivaldis, and a mutual friend of ours, Tony Rumble. He's the booker, but he's learning a lot, you know, under the Kevin Sullivan tree. And again, you talk about great minds. Kevin's, you know, sat under the tree of Eddie Graham as well. And so we're doing a show in the Bahamas, and it's called Nassau Coliseum. Looks nothing like the real Nassau Coliseum. And there's a guy named Tyree Pride, and he's the Haitian sensation, and he's going to tag with Joe Sivaldi against Kevin Sullivan and Taz. Now, when you talk about no boundaries in the Bahamas, the president was overtaken and beheaded for real by this other militia, and the government has been overthrown, and they have a guy who's identical to the person who legit murdered and chopped off the head of this leader. And they have this guy, and Kevin Sullivan says he's bringing him, and they're shooting promos with this guy who looks like him, and he's bringing him to the venue.
Oh boy.
And they're having the match. I wrestled 3 times already that night. Now the guy gets cold feet because he's going to get death threats or murdered because he overthrew the government, and everyone's thinking this is real. So they're like, well, we can't not listen to this promise. And dude, I tell you, I'm 20 years old, and Kevin comes up to me, he goes, you have to put on this mask and act like you're this guy. And I'm like, what? And he's just like, you have to do it. And I'm like, okay. When you go to the ring, they had chicken wire surrounded to get to the ring. And then it just opened up like old school NWA, where you had this one barrier. So they're getting ready for the end of the match, and I'm waiting for my cue, and I have to run down in a mask and fatigues. And Kevin's like, take the inside out bump. I'm like, I don't know what that is. And he's just like, he's just going to ram Taz into you. You flip into the ring and the guy's going to pin you. And I was like, okay. They do that. I get pinned, and they realize, like, here I come running. And I think I had like a fake machete. I get pinned, 1, 2, 3. And all of a sudden I look, Taz and Kevin are gone, and they're running to the back. And I'm now left there alone with all these people are coming to murder the person who murdered their leader. And I'm like, oh my God. And I fought for my life to get through the thing. And they had this door of the locker room, like was an old school castle door that they would slam the wood shut so they couldn't get there. And as I run to the back, I see Sullivan by the door. And dude, I'm fighting my way through chicken wire as they're throwing urine, punching me. And Kevin slowly starts closing the door. And I'm like, please don't let me die. And he's laughing. I run back and he's sitting there. He's like, that's what it's like to be a heel. That's what it's like to be a heel. They slam the door shut. And like, they won't let us leave. And then he's like, take your outfit off. Change it to your baby face outfit. And like, I quickly take off the stuff. We wait. They're waiting for us. We have to chill in the back the whole time. Finally, they come in and like, security wants to kill me too. And they open the door and I'm just sitting there by myself and they're like, where is he? And I'm like, he went that way. And then they all went the other way. So thanks, Kevin, for making me almost die when I was on vacation. Yeah, no. But if you think of the levels to be a hero,
you're welcome.
What he did.
You know what, Mr. Sullivan, I had more questions, but we have to end it on that because it can't get any better than that story. No. Oh, boy.
Thanks for getting me killed, Kev. Thank you. Thanks for teaching me a valuable lesson.
Your home for all things combat sports is SiriusXM Fight Nation. Start your day with Hall of Fame Pro Wrestling Talk on Busted Open.
Respect these men and women that build the business.
Then, the Auk and Barak Show keeps you up to date on all things boxing.
Boxing is the theater of the unexpected.
And MMA guru Luke Thomas has you covered for mixed martial arts.
Joe Rogan is the most important influencer in all of MMA.
The fight game broken down like nowhere else. Only on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Here, EC3 was a damn good heel back in TNA, Tommy. Before we had Ted DiBiase, one of the greatest heels of all time. We are going to give away another pack of tickets for the virtual fan experience with Ted DiBiase. For those who don't win, all you have to do is go to TedTickets.com. Again, that's TedTickets.com, Tommy, to be a part of this virtual experience. But right now, Tommy, why don't we give away our final pack of tickets? That's right. We are now giving you your chance to win four tickets to a virtual fan experience with the Million Dollar Man. So, cool. Right now, give us a call. I think we'll pick caller number three right now. So caller number three at 877-344-4893. Again, 877-344-4893. Right now for your chance to win a set of tickets to this virtual experience with the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. No purchase necessary to enter or win. Must be a U.S. resident to win and at least 18 years old. So again, you know, good luck, and let's see who wins. And again, if you don't, just go to TedTickets.com to be a part of this wonderful experience, Tommy. Before we go out to the Busted Open Nation, are you ready for my top five heels of all time?
Yes, and I'm trying to think of being a heel. Why don't we scalp these giveaways? We'll go old school wrestling, scalp the giveaways, and we'll make a little side cash, and then just say, hey, Teddy, these are free. But meanwhile, we made the fans pay for it. I could be a heel.
I love the
ring
idea.
With a fake machete. I almost get killed.
It's amazing. While you're drinking a protein shake while doing the show, you are amazing. All right, here are my top five heels. Again, Tommy, usually you and I share a brain when it comes to our list, but only two heels that are on your list that are on my list. But here we go at number five. And you knew I was going to throw out this name, Tommy, because I always say that the first wrestler I fell in love with, you know, the first time I ever watched pro wrestling was Tommy Wildfire Rich. One of my greatest feuds and my favorite feuds of all time was Tommy Wildfire Rich with this man, and that is Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer, Tommy, at number five.
Good pick. And like I said, every top babyface needs a top heel, and that feud really, really helped the both of them.
At number four, somebody that I always hated. I know that you said at the end of his career, quickly became a babyface, but I know him as the Russian Nightmare, Ivan Koloff, at number four.
Great, great pick. Fabulous pick. He's in my top 10.
Okay. At number three, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, who we just spoke to. And again, if you missed a moment of any of our Heel Day show, our interviews with Ted DiBiase or Kevin Sullivan, go to SiriusXM app and listen to us on demand. Watch the videos that Mike the Video Guy does and Daniela does on the SiriusXM app. And, of course, subscribe and like the Busted Open podcast. Number three, Ted DiBiase. At number two, somebody who wasn't on your list, which I thought was going to be somebody that was definitely the combination of hatred and fear. At number two, Abdul the Butcher.
Yeah, I get it. And when the whole hatred and fear thing, but to me, he was never in the territory too long. He was a different version of an Andre the Giant because he always was. He was always like the surprise bad guy enforcer. So like that's why I knew when he came to town it was trouble, but he wouldn't be there that long. And a lot of times, you know, there was never any clean finishes back then. Not that I cared, but Abdullah definitely for like all the bloodshed that, and like his fear factor, yes. But for me, he wasn't a, I don't know. It just didn't resonate that way.
All right. And number one, I'm shocked that this wasn't your number one, but the man we just spoke to a few minutes ago, the Prince of Darkness himself, Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, the only reason why he wasn't is because of the numbers that Vince did. That was how my discerning factor was. But yeah, Kevin's a great heel. Always was, always will be. And, you know, his psychology, especially that one thing that he said, what he couldn't make up for in height, he made up for it in his work and his aggressiveness of being a top guy. And I remember him specifically when he told that Andre story, I remembered him jumping off the second rope or doing stuff off the second rope, like his chops to wear down Andre. But to me, he was doing that as leverage, but then there's also the visuals of him choking Andre. And when you're looking at that photo, because that's how a lot of us got it, or even those stills, he's the same height then as Andre the Giant. And it's those psychological things that at times are missing. They really, really are. Because like you said, I mean, I don't envision Kevin Sullivan as 5'8".
No, not at all. Not at all.
You think of this man as a monster. And a lot of these lists are, like you said earlier, it's what you envision why. This isn't a list that we can argue about. It's just what drew fear or drew like hatred for you, that emotion. We got from Dax from the Revival or the Revival. He said Don Morocco, Roddy Piper, Tully Blanchard, Cornette and the Midnights, and Vince. A lot of wrestlers chiming in. I love it. Shockingly, we have a difference of opinion with somebody. Who do you think that person is, David?
Bully.
Bully healed us. He's not even on the show and he's healing us. And he wrote, doesn't tag us either. If you're compiling a list of top five greatest heels of all time and Freddie Blassie and the original Sheik aren't on it, your list is invalid. So he just healed us on our own show and he's not even on.
I know.
Such an angry man.
And Bully could be on that list as well because he's definitely one of the great.
He's
everyone's
hated list for real.
Yes, he's definitely number one heel on Busted Open. There's no doubt about that. We have our winner, our second winner. Boom, we gave away those virtual experiences. Again, go to tedtickets.com to be a part of it. Let's go out to our winner for the Million Dollar Man virtual experience. Let's go out to Tim in Ohio. Tim, congratulations, my friend.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, No, this is going to be awesome. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So do you have a question when you join this for Ted DiBiase?
I've got a few. I'm going to try to start kind of narrowing down on a sheet of paper or something. At least have something to go into it with.
Nice.
Yeah, nice, Tim. Again, make that laminated list of questions for Ted DiBiase when you're a part of this virtual experience. Again, Tim, congratulations, man, and have a fun time, brother.
All right. Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure.
You got it. Love giving things to the Busted Open Nation. Let's go right out to the nation because we got a lot of people holding. So let's go out to Joe in North Carolina. Our good friend Joe, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much. I got my top five as well. And My number five is Muhammad Hassan. I hated that guy for every reason there was. Number four, Rick Rude with Bobby the Brain Heenan. Hated him. Number three, Stephanie McMahon Helmsley. Number two, New Jack. Number one, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
Nice. I like it, Joe. Joe, that's a good list, buddy. I mean, you know, again, having Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, can't go wrong with that. Let's go back out to the nation. Let's go out to Rufus in South Dakota. Rufus, what's going on?
What's going on? How y'all doing today?
What's up, Rufus?
Okay, my top list is Wade Barrett, Moolah, China, Scary Cherry, and my number one is greater than Shawn Michaels' heel turn is Dave LaGreca when he super kicked the WWE for AEW.
I never super kicked the WWE for AEW. First of all, Rufus, I love all of wrestling. Second, it's amazing to me, Rufus. I mean, you know, I get shit from WWE fans that I'm in love with AEW. Then I get shit from AEW fans to say that I'm in love with the WWE. I can't win, Rufus. I can't win.
Hey, Dave, you know my stance on this. We had this conversation plenty of times. So you are my greatest heel.
Well, you know what, Rufus? I'm banned from AEW, and I think Edge actually banned me from WWE, though he doesn't have that right to do it. At least Cody has the right. Edge doesn't have the right.
Listen, you were just on Impact Television, Dave. You're banned from both those companies now.
That's right. That's right. You want to know something? You know what my favorite show is? The one who had me on TV, Impact Wrestling. So my favorite's not AEW or WWE. It's Impact, Rufus.
Hey, Dave, I still love you, though. You're my hero.
You love to hate me. Rufus, you're my favorite caller. Thanks for the call. I love Rufus. I love Rufus. And somebody else who I love and probably is my favorite caller of the 11 years that this show has been on the air, Tommy, is Mark from Texas. What's going on, Mark?
Hi, Dave. I'm just happy to be on. I mean, I listen to your show every day. It's like the best show in the world.
Well, you know, Mark, it is the best show in the world. And thanks for calling today, Mark. Who's your favorite heel of all time, Mark? And I don't want to hear Mark Henry. I want to hear somebody else than Mark Henry. Because every time I ask you a question, Mark, from Texas, your answer is always Mark Henry. It's always, who's the greatest wrestler of all time? Mark Henry. Who's the greatest babyface of all time? Mark Henry. Who's the greatest opponent for The Undertaker? Mark Henry. Who's in the greatest match of all time? Mark Henry. So, Mark in Texas, is there another answer other than Mark Henry for the greatest heel of all time?
Well, if you don't put yourself over, then who is going to do it? But you know what, man? I'm gonna run it down real fast, and then we're gonna talk about it after. I would have to say the Nation of Domination, which is me putting myself over again.
Go ahead.
The Freebirds. I grew up watching them just completely destroy the whole Texas landscape. I mean, they for years and years. The Freebirds destroyed everybody. And I heard the guy call early in the show, say, Rick Rude, listen, man, I've never had abs. And I hate everybody that have abs still. But he was the first person that I ever looked at and go, I just hate him. I don't know why I hate him. I just hate him. And then, of course, his talent was undeniable. And then, I mean... As much as you didn't want him on the list, I would have to say that Vince McMahon, he wrestled. He's, you know, the ultimate heel. And then Kevin Sullivan. I wanted to put Bruiser Brody on the list. But as a little kid, Bruiser Brody, I liked him like I like Ric Flair. When Bruiser Brody came down, I cheered. I was like, yeah, because I knew I was going to get to see somebody get their ass beat. And that's why I eliminated Bruiser Brody from my list. But, I mean, you got to put Kevin Sullivan up there. Like, as a child, I was legit scared. Like, I mean, I talked to him when I was in at the Cauliflower Alley Club in Vegas a couple of years ago. And I started stumbling over my words because I thought he was going to take my soul. I'm a grown-ass man. I eat people for fun. And I'm standing there stumbling over my words. Like, he still had a psychological effect on me. So, yeah, Kevin Sullivan is the scariest dude I remember from wrestling.
I love what Mark just said, that Mark eats people for fun. It's not for nourishment. It's not like that movie Alive when he's stuck up on a mountain and he has to eat people in order to live. Mark just does it for fun. So maybe, Mark, you are one of the greatest heels of all time.
I think I've said more heelish things than done.
Mark, let me ask you something. I just saw your thing with Steve Austin. I was gonna call you out on social media. How do you say that Big Show has a bigger appetite than myself? I beat Big Show in an eating contest.
Man, I don't remember that.
I ate more pieces of pizza than him. You and I have had the meat sweats together. How dare you say someone could eat more than me?
You know what? I apologize, Tom. You know I'm not malicious. I'm gonna post today that I had a conversation on Busted Open with Tommy Dreamer, and he did enlighten me to the fact that he beat the Big Show in an eating contest. So
thank you. I take that seriously. Still real to me.
I sat with Big Show at Carnegie Deli one time, and I watched him eat a whole, that big giant stack sandwich of pastrami and corned beef. And I had sandwiches for three more days after that. I couldn't believe that he ate that whole damn thing.
I ate 5.5 feet of sandwich at Taz's engagement party. 5.5 feet of a sandwich I ate by myself.
Holy shit.
It took 6 hours, but I did it. And if we're talking about great heels, ladies and gentlemen, I worked Mark Henry many, many times. And when his music hit, people would be like, oh, shit. And Mark did little nuances that he learned later by giving people looks and just stopping. Or sometimes he'd whip his hair and get the fans all wet. And you'd see like a row of people be like, I'm sorry, like back up. And there was very few people that would ever, they jaw jack when he turned his back to them. But when he was facing them, people were jaw-jacking, but they would do it very, very cautiously. And Mark was a great heel. Hey, he was fortunate to work all the time.
Tommy, can I tell you a funny story? Well, I guess it's not funny. It was funny to me because I'm just that sadistic. But I was wrestling Nick Densmore in Louisville, Kentucky. And this guy in the crowd called me the N-word. Oof. And I was looking right at him when he said it. And I picked Nick up and I slammed him and I screamed probably as loud as I've ever screamed in wrestling, stay there. And I rolled out of the ring and brother, it looked like Moses parting the Red Sea. And I walked up to this guy and I said, say it again to my face. And he started shaking like a horror movie shaking. And I was like, he grabbed a chair. And I said, you gonna hit me with the chair? Hit me with the chair. And I said, I closed my eyes. And I said, I'm begging you to hit me with this chair. My eyes are closed. You can do it right now. It wasn't nowhere safe in this universe or any other universe if he had hit me with that chair. Because that would have been the first time a human got ate in front of a crowd for real. I'm talking about like a lion chasing down prey and eating it all. It would have been the worst story in the history of pro wrestling. I'm glad the guy came to his senses and started apologizing.
Well, I'm sure, so, Mark, that everyone smelled piss and shit at that moment as well. So.
Thanks for listening. Catch us Monday through Saturday on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation, Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.